What up, people, and welcome to Lane Pod, City of Lane's 10 to 15 minutes weekly podcast focused on MBA admissions and experience for motivated Africans. So whether you're an MBA enthusiast, applicant, admit student, or alum, this is the show for you. I'm Samuel, your host, and today we will delve into a topic that resonates deeply with many of our listeners. The obsession with MBA prestige and the unintended consequences it brings. I know this is going to be a controversial topic in many ways, but I encourage you to just put your beliefs down and listen objectively and weigh the arguments logically. In episode 59 of season 1, I talked about the 5 scenarios where prioritizing MBA school prestige makes no sense. Then I'll recap all those scenarios again, but I encourage you to listen to that episode, as a lot of what I'll be saying will be building off of what we discussed there. So, what are the 5 scenarios? Number 1, when you're not trying to impress or oppress anyone. 2, when you're going to a non-prestigious, when going to a non-prestigious but great school is way better than where you are right now. Again, tick that again because I bluffed in the first one. When going to a non-prestigious but great school is a lot better. What do I mean by prestigious or great school? Maybe a top 100 school, a top 70 school. When doing an MBA there is way, way better than where you are right now. Number 3. When going to a prestigious school isn't going to be your greatest achievement in life. You're going to do a lot of great things where talking about where you did an MBA is just going to be so minute that you're not going to want to mention it because you've done great things. Imagine Elon Musk talking about where he did his MBA. Imagine, you know, whoever it is that you kind of respect and the thousands of great leaders out there, great people and achieve, or Albert Einstein talking about where he went to school, or Nobel laureate winners talking about where they did their MBA. It's just so minute. Number 4, if you cannot afford to pay for it. When I say even when you take loans, you know you still cannot afford to pay back those loans. Number 5, you're intrinsically motivated and ready to do the hard work. These are the 5 scenarios, and I think there are more. It's non-exhaustive. But these are the 5 important scenarios where prioritizing an MBA prestige makes no sense. And today, what I'll be doing is I'll be building on that through a 4-part series that explores the depth and breadth of the unhealthy pursuit of prestige in an MBA program. Part 1 will explore the allure of prestigious MBA among Africans. We discuss the societal pressures and perceived benefits that fuel that obsession. Part 2 will uncover the dark side of this pursuit, the pressure to take shortcuts, the exclusion, racism, the unhealthy competition that often go unnoticed, and the impact that that eventually has on the candidate. Part 3, we then shift our attention into the true value of the MBA education beyond the program's brand. We make a case for what we take for granted. We argue that the knowledge, the skills and experience gained, as well as the connections made during and after the MBA program, are more important than the institution name itself. And lastly, we wrap it up at part 4, where we close by describing what an healthy pursuit of knowledge and true transformation looks like. So, let's see. Are you ready for part 1? Let's go. Now, before I delve into part 1, I want to caveat it. This particular series is really geared towards people who are under huge pressure to stretch the truth. And really, I'm just going to pause here again because I made a commitment to myself not to record this twice. So I'm going to bluff here and there. I'll take my sentences again. I'll repeat myself, but I'll keep it as natural as possible. So let me start again with the caveat that I blundered again. If you can go through the MBA program or attend an M7 program without any huge pressure to stretch the truth, then it's fine. Do an MBA in an M7 program. But if you have to go through huge pressure where you're almost tempted to stretch the truth, I encourage you to pay very close attention to what I'm about to say over the next 4 series, because this is for you. So as I said earlier on, part one explores the allure of the pool of prestigious programs amongst Africans. And we will delve into 2 parts. One, the societal pressures that many face. And 2, the perceived benefit that fuels the obsession for wanting to go to a prestigious program. So let's start with part one, societal pressures. There are 3 main societal pressures that fuel the desire to do a prestigious school, or go to a prestigious program, or do a prestigious MBA program. And the reason why it's important to recognize what these 3 are is so that you can fully understand all of the externalities that is shaping your view on what is true and what is not. Number 1 is our history with education in these schools. Number 2 is the status symbol and our culture that drives it. And number 3 is the media that persists and continues to propagate the history and status symbol. So let's start with history. In many African countries, post and pre-independence era, a lot of our leaders went to a handful number of schools. So it was Oxford, it was Harvard, it was a couple of schools that people went to. And because those names became really attached to the people that we see as successful, we became blinded to other really great schools that could help us achieve our own goals. So we believe that our leaders, and think about it, you know, when you think about our post-colonial era leaders and the achievements that they had, the older you grow, the more you start to question and ask, did education really do anything to shape them? So why do we still persist in wanting to go to the schools that has been so ingrained in our minds through history that it is those schools or nothing else? Well, it's because of our subconscious. But the more we recognize where that source of pressure is coming from, the likely it is that it has no stronghold on us. Number 2 really ties closely to our culture. I don't care what part of Africa you're from, but status symbol is a huge and significant part of our culture. And that's a scenario where the concept where we equate status with intelligence, capability, and success potential. So you see someone who's really rich, then you immediately assume that they're intelligent, they're capable, and successful. You see someone who's gone to schools or who's got a certain status symbol or class, you immediately assume they're better than you. But one thing we fail to realize is for many of us, when we move and we say we're doing our MBA in North American Europe, we're not really looking to come back immediately to work into the society just yet. As a matter of fact, you're moving away from it into a society that does not necessarily equate status with intelligence, capability, and success potential. So why do you need to have a status symbol that becomes so irrelevant in a society where you want to thrive in? Think about that for a moment. Number 3, it has to do with media and over-indexing for success stories of individuals from prestigious schools. They don't tell you the dark side or the failure stories of people who have been there. And I assure you that ratio is 1 to 10. For every 1 successful stories that you heard, 1 story that you heard, there are 10 other stories that are completely eating from you because the people who own that story are too ashamed to tell you that they failed. With that said, I want to wrap up by saying prestige is not equal to success or satisfaction. But despite the logicality of the conclusion that prestige equals success or satisfaction, we're enticed to believe so. We're forgotten to think for ourselves and we're persuaded by crowd mentality that it does. And today I want you to think very carefully about those societal pressures in you that is pushing you to prioritize prestige over what is truly great for you. Because one thing we need to think about is the implication of that. Because if you're under huge pressure to get into an M7 program, you'll take shortcuts where possible. Now, let's wrap it up by talking about some of the perceived benefits of prestige in an MBA program that may not necessarily be true. And there are four. Number one is career opportunities. Number two is the quality of the education. Number three is the potential for networking. And number four is recognition. Let's take it one step at a time. For many people, when you think about a prestigious program, you immediately think about boundless career opportunity, access to a wide range of opportunity and job pages and all of all that. But one thing we fail to realize is access is not equal to employment. The fact that you're able to interview with all the MBBs does not mean you will get into the MBB program or the MBB job. Like, you're not going to be a consultant in McKinsey, Bain, and BCG just because you got an interview there. There are other factors, the circle you belong to, the cultural compatibility that you have with that, your own intrinsic value and potential. Also, getting in is not equal to sustaining and growing up in that firm, you know. So, you essentially want to leap over a gap that you should have taken time to slowly cover. Career opportunities might exist, but it might not exist for you because there are gaps that you have failed to cover because you just assumed that once you get into Harvard, your problems are solved. No, they just started. Number two is the quality of education. It is true that many top 10 MBA programs offer unparalleled faculty quality. They can bring in the CEOs of businesses that you can only watch on TV. They can bring in business leaders from across the world to speak to you. But of what use is that 100% quality education if your mind can only capture 30% of that? Think about that for a moment. And then let me add to that, of what use is 100% if all you need at this stage of your life is 70? They say knowledge is power, right? But there are certain truths in our lives that we're not yet ready to handle until we get a certain level of exposure. You're not going to tell a two-year-old kid that Santa does not exist, except if that kid is a genius that can manage the truth, of which not all of us are. But you're going to wait till they're a lot older. So what use is those unparalleled quality education when you're not yet in a position to capture that? Be honest with yourself. You're probably at 33% of education quality based on where you're coming from. What you need to do is capture an extra 37 more. That puts you at 70. And if you can use 76, let's just say 80% of 70% of what you're learning, it's better than those who can only capture or use 30% of 100%. You might need to play that back again and do the math, but you're a lot better at being able to maximize what you know than just capturing a lot more than what you need. It's not what you know, your knowledge. It's what you do with it, the wisdom that comes out of it. Number three, networking. We and this is a huge one. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and you know, they're making a case for it's worth taking a loan for network. And I just sat there thinking, how does that make sense? How does that, in what world does, and I know in what world it makes sense. It makes sense in a world where people are already at where they need to be. They are not under any huge pressure. They belong to certain circles. They've closed a lot of gaps in their exposure level. But for you, you're not. You probably never traveled out of your own country. You don't know what it's like to work with international people. So for you, that network that you think is worth taking a loan for may not be worth taking a loan for. And let me explain that a bit more. Networking is a two-way street. You need to be interested in the other person at the other side. And that's my alarm for telling me that we're way over 15 minutes, but I'll wrap up in a moment. You need to be interested in you need to be interested in the other person. You see certain things in the value that they have. But it's also a two-way street. They also need to be interested in you. And they also need to see value in having a relationship with you. But think about it. You're trying to network up. Why should they network with someone who they don't see an immediate apparent value that you offer to them right now? And truly, truly speaking, think about it very carefully. What value are you going to be offering the next person? Why should they want to be in a circle that you belong to? In many situations, you really don't have it yet. So you end up over-indexing for a network that don't necessarily want to open that door for you. And taking loans to go to school where the relationships may not necessarily work out the way you plan, as against taking a scholarship to go into a school where the network is a lot more welcoming for you and you can build the skills, the knowledge, the experience that makes you even more valuable for that next level circle of network. Do you see where I'm going to there? So yes, the network exists, but are you going to be able to maximize it? That's a different question you need to answer for yourself. Number four has to do with recognition. A degree from a prestigious institution is widely recognized and respected and can be beneficial for a global job market. So you get a degree from Wharton. Anywhere else you go in the world, everyone knows Wharton. They're probably not going to know WashU. I shouldn't mention names. But they probably may not know Kari. Like, I didn't know Kari when I was back in Nigeria until I did the research myself. An average Nigerian is probably going to know what Harvard is, but they may not know what a school in Vancouver that I went to is. But you're over-indexing for global mobility when you still have a green card. Of what use is global mobility or recognition where you are... you're moving with the most disadvantaged passport in the world? You're never going to get a chance to work in some country because you have a green passport. The odds are so much stacked against you that you're immobile. The only place you're mobile in is in the market where you are in. And in that market, in North America and Europe, nobody cares whether you went to Harvard or not. People care what you can think, the value you offer. So, ask yourself, are you just over-indexing for things and making assumptions around the fact that career opportunities equates to employment, or that the quality of education is all you can maximize right now, or that the network that you think you have access to will want to welcome you with open arms, or that you need the recognition for a degree that might be so irrelevant in the market that you plan to work in? All these are perceived benefits that may not be realistic for you, but you need to sit down very closely with yourself and answer the question of whether that's important and whether you can maximize that. So in conclusion, be weary of the societal pressures, the often misprioritized perceived benefits that pushes you down the path of an unhealthy pursuit of MBA prestige. Over truly just improving your intrinsic worth. Pay attention to the status symbolism, the history, and the societal expectations and media influences that shape your outview without your permission. Ask yourself, if the perceived benefit of the career opportunity you need time to build, the education you won't apply, the networks that may not want you, and if it's what's the cost that you may not be able to cover. I'm not asking you to doubt yourself or play safe. I shoot for the stars. But I'm asking you to stare truth in the face and ask yourself some really, really deep questions that no other person would answer for you. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening. It's a bit long, but if you'd like to ask a question or learn more about Lane, links and descriptions and the show notes, or you can just Google for us, or Google City of Lane rather. I'll see you in the next episode, which is the part two, The Dark Side of the Pursuit of Prestige. I apologize for the errors or like the sleep tongues here and there. I just made a promise to speak to you as natural as I would if I was having a conversation in front of you. Thank you for being considerate, and I'll see you in the next episode.